dark I might witness a murder, but for the most part our neighbors just sat in their living rooms, watching TV. The only place that seemed truly different was owned by a man named Mr. Tomke, who did not believe in television. This was told to us by our mother's friend, who dropped by one afternoon with a basket full of okra. The woman did not editorialize, rather she just presented her information, leaving her listener to make of it what she might. Had my mother said, "That's the craziest thing I ever heard in my life," I assumed that the friend would have agreed. And had she said, "Three cheers for Mr. Tomke," the friend likely would have agreed as well. It was a kind of test, as was the okra. To say that you did not believe in television was different from saying that you did not care for it. Belief implied that television had a master plan, and that you were against it. It also suggested that you thought too much. When my mother reported that Mr. Tomke did not believe in television, my father said, "Well, good for him. I don't know that I believe in it either." "That's exactly how I feel," my mother said. And then my parents watched the news and whatever came on after the news. Word spread that Mr. Tomke did not own a television, and you began hearing that while this was all very well and good, it was unfair of him to inflict his beliefs upon others, specifically his innocent wife and children. It was speculated that just as the blind man develops a keener sense of hearing, the family must somehow compensate for their loss. "Maybe they read," my mother's friend said. "Maybe they listen to the radio, but you can bet your boots they're doing something." I wanted to know what this something was, and so I began peering through the Tomke's windows. During the day, I'd stand across the street from their house, acting as though I were waiting for someone. And at night, when the view was better and I had less chance of being discovered, I would creep into their yard and hide in the bushes beside their fence. Because they had no TV, the Tomkes were forced to talk during dinner. They had no idea how puny their lives were, and so they were not ashamed that a camera would have found them uninteresting. They did not know what attractive was, or what dinner was supposed to look like, or even what time people were supposed to eat. Sometimes they wouldn't sit down until 8 o'clock, long after everyone else had finished doing their dishes. During the meal, Mr. Tomke would occasionally pound the table and point at his children with a fork, but the moment he finished, everyone would start laughing. I got the idea that he was imitating someone else and wondered if he spied on us while we were eating. When fall arrived and school began, I saw the Tomke children marching up the hill with paper sacks in their hands. The son was one grade lower than me, and the daughter was one grade higher. We never spoke, but I'd pass them in the halls from time to time, in attempt to view the world through their eyes. What must it be like to be so ignorant and alone? Could a normal person even imagine it? Staring at an Elmer Fudd lunchbox, I'd tried to divorce myself from everything I already knew. Elmer's inability to pronounce the letter R, his constant pursuit of an intelligent and considerably more famous rabbit. I tried to think of him as just a drawing, but it was impossible to separate him from his celebrity. One day in class, a boy named William began to write the wrong answer on the blackboard, and our teacher flailed her arms, saying, "Warning, Will! Danger! Danger!" Her voice was synthetic and void of emotion, and we laughed knowing that she was imitating the robot in a weekly show about a family who lived in outer space. The Tomkes, though, they would have thought she was having a heart attack. It occurred to me that they needed a guide, someone who could accompany them through the course of an average day and point out all the things they were unable to understand. I could have done it on weekends, but friendship would have taken away their mystery and interfered with the good feeling I got from pitying them, and so I kept my distance. In early October, the Tomkes bought a boat, and everyone seemed greatly relieved, especially my mother's friend, who noted that the motor was definitely second-hand. It was reported that Mr. Tomke's father owned a house on the lake and had invited the family to use it whenever they liked. This explained why they were gone all weekend, but it did not make their absences any easier to bear. I felt as if my favorite show had been canceled. Halloween fell on a Saturday that year, and by the time my mother took us to the store, all the good costumes were gone. My sisters dressed as witches,